The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it. I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it. By George, she's got it. Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that soggy plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Bravo!
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Welcome to the Wind Machine Podcast, not your average Eurovision podcast. My name's Danny Tregoning, and today I'm joined by the paella to my tortilla, Mark Perkins.
Hi, Danny. Hi, everyone out there in Eurovision world land, universe, galaxy, solar system, all of the above.
That's covering a lot of bases there, Mark.
Yeah, well, Eurovision is universal.
That is correct. We've had some big stuff happened since our last episode.
Oh, yeah.
So we drove up to Sydney with Fleur for the ESC Fan OGAE Australia AGM and Disco. That's not a drive I'm looking forward to doing again anytime soon. Not that the company wasn't great. It's a boring drive between Melbourne and Sydney.
It didn't help that it rained going up there.
That's true. It was very rainy. But it was totally worth it.
Oh,
we had a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. It was an epic night. Epic day, epic night.
It was a very nice trip. Also, Yonola Sand, our mate, who unfortunately gets a break from this episode since we're not using the Yoda Beanie of Doom.
Yes.
It's a shame, hey.
He did have an announcement.
He did have an announcement. We're going to Tel Aviv next year.
I'm a golden boy.
Come here to enjoy. I'm the king of fun. Yes. Oh. Let me show you Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And it's going to be great fun. Now, if you haven't already figured out, last episode, we picked Spain out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom, and we're focusing on our favourites based on a jury of two. We have...
Raise your battle cry!
The night is for us.
And then the dawn arrives.
You don't want to say this into the mirror three times.
And then a bit of wet dancing. So, let's begin.
The Kingdom of Spain is a sovereign state mostly located in the Iberian Peninsula in Europe. The country's mainland is bordered to the south and east by the Mediterranean Sea, except for a small land boundary with Gibraltar. To the north and northeast by France, Andorra, the Bay of Biscay. Ooh, that almost sounds like a biscuit. And to the west and northwest by Portugal and the Atlantic Ocean. Spain's territory includes two large archipelagos. I was kind of hoping I'd never have to say that word again. The Balearic Islands in the Mediterranean Sea and the Canary Islands off the African Atlantic coast.
Tweet, tweet.
Two cities, Setúa and Melilla. Am I saying that right? Probably not.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Who knows?
On the African mainland and several small islands in the Alboran Sea near the African coast. Spain is the only European country to have a border with an African country, Morocco.
Ooh.
With an area of 505,990 kilometres squared, Spain is the largest country in southern Europe, the second largest country in Western Europe, and the European Union, and the fourth largest country in the European continent. By population, Spain is the sixth largest in Europe and fifth in the European Union. Spain's capital and largest city is Madrid. There you go, Fleur. Other major urban areas include Barcelona, Valencia, Seville, and Bilbao.
You forgot Malaga.
Malaga. It almost sounds like Malaga. We won't say that, though. That's naughty.
Naughty.
Can't say that. Spain hosts the world's third largest number of UNESCO World Heritage Sites. It is a member of the United Nations, the European Union, the Eurozone, the Schengen area, the World Trade Organization, and many other international organizations. Spain has a permanent invitation to the G20 summits that occur generally once a year.
The flag of Spain, as it is defined in the Spanish Constitution of 1978, consists of three horizontal stripes: red, yellow, and red again, the yellow stripe being twice the size of each red stripe. The origin of the current flag of Spain is the naval ensign of 1785, Pabellón de la Marina de Guerra, under Charles III of Spain. It was chosen by Charles III himself among 12 different flags designed by Antonio Valdez y Bazán. The flag remained marine for much of the next 50 years, flying over coastal fortresses, marine barracks, and other naval properties. During the Peninsular War, the flag could also be found on marine regiments fighting inland. Not until 1820 was the first Spanish land unit, the La Princesa Regiment, provided with one, and it was not until 1843 that Queen Isabel II of Spain would make the flag official. Throughout the 19th and 20th centuries, the colour scheme of the flag remained intact, with the exception of the Second Republic period, which was between 1931 and 1939, the only changes centred on the coat of arms.
Spain is legally multilingual, and the Constitution establishes that the nation will protect all Spaniards and the peoples of Spain in the exercise of human rights, their cultures and traditions, languages and institutions. Spanish, Español, is recognized in the Constitution, as is Castilian. Recognized in the Constitution as Castellan, is the official language of the entire country. And it is the right and duty of every Spaniard to know the language. The other official languages of Spain, co-official with Spanish, are Basque, Catalan, and Galician. In the tourist areas of the Mediterranean coast and the islands, English and German are widely spoken by tourists, foreign residents and tourism workers.
Many of those are former expat British who have retired into the lovely land of Spain.
We have a lot of people that run off to Spain. Like, I'm pretty sure your family runs off to Spain occasionally, don't they? It's too far to come to Australia, but we'll go to Spain.
Yeah, one of my aunts and uncle, they go to the Canary Islands pretty much every year.
It's a bit like our Bali, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 We actually have a special guest in the room, and she's not going to say anything because she's a bit frightened of microphones, but my mother Penny is in the room, and I'm sure Mum ran to Spain a few times when she was still living in the UK.
Well, my parents certainly did. Mallorca was a popular destination.
Oh, absolutely. Wasn't there something about lifestyles of the rich and famous?
Lifestyles of the rich and famous. Yeah.
He passed away recently.
He did.
Yeah, I was a bit sad. That was a part of our history gone.
Let's
throw to our first song.
From 2016, here's Say Yay by Barai.
Hello, Mr. Fighter, look, there we go again. Go get us, don't forsake. They never wallow in their fate. More than 1,000 miles until the end. We're never gonna know what lies ahead. We only got today to learn from our yesterday. My whole life,
going all the way.
I'm still alive,
ready to turn away from broken mirrors.
I feel alive,
ready to say,
I wanna fight, won't fix my wrong.
I think it's Barai. It could be Barai.
By Barai.
By Barai. It almost sounds like a beret.
Barai.
Okay, good luck with this. You can do this. Barbara.
Barbara Raizabal Gonzalez Allaire, born 1982, known professionally as Barai, is a Spanish singer and songwriter. Barai began her career at 16, recording covers to songs by Christina Aguilera, among others. In 2001, she participated in the Benidorm International Song Festival together with Gonzalo Nuche, whoever that is, as part of a duo known as Dos Puntes. They got the second place. Shortly after the festival, Barai moved to Miami, of all places, where she decided demos in the Latin pop genre that she decided to keep unpublished. Back in Madrid, she became a regular performer in the city's concert halls. She has released 3 albums and 13 singles. Her song, Say Yay, came 22nd in the final on 77 points.
Weird thing is, this was a fan favourite leading in, and I'm not really sure if it's anything to do with the Eurovision stage performance, which we will talk about shortly.
Yeah.
The official clip is really cool.
Yeah, it is.
She's in a city street and she's got her headphones on. So weird thing is she's listening to herself sing.
Yeah, I know.
That's a bit weird. She gets on a train and then she finds a tunnel and she decides to dance in the tunnel. While she's dancing in the tunnel, other people are also dancing as well. So there's this huge kind of wave of music happening around the town. Then she falls over. She's just like me. I actually tried to do the Say Yay dance in the kitchen before.
Did you?
I did. I should have got it on film. I'm better at falling over, I can tell you that. Then, of course, there is a massive party in the tunnel. The song ends and everyone cheers. Awesome. Now, at Eurovision, sometimes we find that some acts will bring something from their official clip to the Eurovision stage, sometimes it doesn't translate well.
No.
So, on the stage in 2016, we've got Barai. See, I'm calling her Barai.
Barai, Barai, tomato, tomato. Let's call the old thing off.
She's wearing one of those really long glitter sports tops.
With the number 3 on it.
Yes, and these kind of groovy sand shoes. She's got 4 backup singers. And then the fall happens again. But the thing is, the audience doesn't get it. And they think she's actually fallen for real.
Well, we did at the time, didn't we?
Well, we did. Yeah, we did. It was like, oh, no! There is a cool bit that happens. It's a little bit like Summer Loving, Summer Nights from Greece. We have a bit of split screen happening.
Yeah.
And she kind of dances with herself. That's a little bit Gen X, really, isn't it? Mm. Dancing with myself. Very strange that this didn't perform as well, but we have found the songs that we have picked for Spain, being a big 5 is not necessarily an advantage.
Yeah, Spain has struggled quite a bit lately.
Yeah. We'll, of course, get into that in Spain and Eurovision. But, yeah, it's been very interesting. And we found, too, we struggled to get a 5. And I didn't think that would happen with Spain because Spain is one of those countries that I just go, who sang that when, huh?
Yeah, same.
It's not one that sticks in my brain. But then, of course, when we started to listen to them, they were a little bit like Malta and they went through a stage where they were very much the same.
Same, yes.
So we've tried to pick songs that have stood out amongst a whole lot of sameness.
For good reasons.
For good reasons, I promise. There's no songs on our list that we don't like. We don't do that.
No.
No, because we like songs. And that's one thing that Jason likes about our podcast is we never rubbish the songs.
Well, rubbishing songs, talking about rubbishing songs, you know. Wait till we get to another song.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, no, I wouldn't say that I'm going to rubbish it, but yeah.
I don't think you should because Look Me just let me know it's one of his favourites from Spain.
Which one?
The one that you might rubbish later.
Sorry, Look Me.
Yes, see, Look Me is really big on Spain. Here's La Noche Es Para Mí by Soraya from 2009. Soraya Arnelas Rubilas. Look, I'm sorry, listeners. You know we've been through 46 episodes together, and you know that languages other than English are not our forte. So we will butcher Spanish as well. She was born in 1982 and is a Spanish singer. At the age of 11, she left for Madrid. That's where everyone goes to chase their dreams. She wanted to study drama, but soon started working as a flight attendant for Iberworld. Is that a bit like Jetstar?
Could be.
Yeah. And she travelled around the world, as you do when you're a flight attendant. She speaks three languages, English, Portuguese and Spanish. Good on her. Soraya participated in the fourth season of the Spanish television series Star Academy in 2005, where she came second overall. She has released six albums. La Noche Es Para Mí translates to The Night Is For Me, and it charted in both Spain and Sweden.
Okay.
Randomly. The song came 24th in the final on 23 points. Before I go into anything else, apparently they're using Star Academy again because one song that didn't make it that was this year's was also Star Academy. The beautiful thing about going backwards in time for this is we get a little bit retro. And I hate to say that early 2000s, mid-2000s are retro, but they kind of are because this official clip is like something from the Backstreet Boys.
But it's 2009.
I know, but it feels very,
it
you know,
does.
Everybody. Yeah. So we've got five men and Soraya in sort of, she's sort of in a blue and white halter top dress thing. And then she changes into a slip dress, which is very early 2000s, really. Mm. I think I went through a phase of wearing slip dresses, but I'd always wear them on top of T-shirts. I'm not a fan of my arms.
Okay.
Lay down your arms and surrender. On the Eurovision stage, we've got 3 female backup dancers and 2 male backup dancers. Now, there's a pink and blue theme happening, which is very nice.
Aww.
All the ladies are kind of in this pink and blue thing, and the fellas are in suits. It's very nice. There's lots of backflips from the guy who has the very long blonde hair. He's quite gymnastic. Then, of course, there's this weird bit where she goes up on a podium and then this orange sheet comes out of nowhere.
And she disappears.
She disappears. So they drop the sheet. And it's, oh, my God, where has she gone? And then we pan across and she's suddenly singing on the floor, as you do.
Mm.
One thing that I really love about the 2009 stage in Russia is that they actually projected song words. You know that big circle they had?
Yes.
I loved that because when you sort of pan out during the chorus, which of course is in English, you get all the English words and that kind of gets the crowd going, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, every good Eurovision entry needs a truckload of pyro.
Oh, naturally.
You can tick that off your list if you're keeping track. So, of course, with the big countries of Eurovision, of course, this is our last one, which was weird it took this long to actually hit Spain. History. How did you go?
This is potentially the longest history, or one of the longest histories that we have done. I cut a significant amount.
All right, so don't replace our, well, don't replace your history degree with this podcast.
Oh, God, no.
Don't ever do that because we use Wikipedia and who the hell knows if that's correct. Oh, the secret's out of the bag. Oh, my God, it's only taken 46 episodes and I've let everyone know that we use Wiki. We do use some other sites.
We do. We summarise.
Sometimes, we
cross-check.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Anyway.
we bring, what was her name? Marianne Van Dorsler. She comes out and then the Tattersall's agents, you know. Sorry, that's a Gavin Wood joke. We should stop that. So, yeah, so this is going to be quite intense.
But it's all very interesting. I mean, I did a bit of Spanish history throughout my early years. Primary school, high school, uni.
You did Spanish history in high school?
A little bit, yeah. I think I did a project on Francisco Pizarro, or was it Cortez? I don't know. One of those discoverers / plunderers
of
America.
One of those dudes, yeah.
Interesting stuff. And, you know, I had an interest in, you know, Spanish discovery in history, mostly due to the 80s cartoon Mysterious Cities of Gold.
I was waiting for that. You've been holding on to that one for quite some time. I've been waiting for that to come up.
Yeah.
Oh,
we better start history.
Yeah, all right. You know. So settle in. It's a long one, so make sure you've got a cup of tea and some biscuits. Yes, look me, get your digestives out. You'll need it for this.
The largest groups inhabiting the Iberian Peninsula before the Roman conquest were the Iberians, of course, and the Celts. The Iberians inhabited the Mediterranean side of the peninsula from the northeast to the southeast. The Celts inhabited much of the inner and Atlantic sides of the peninsula from the northwest to the southwest. A number of cities were founded along the coast by Phoenicians, and trading outposts and colonies were established by Greeks in the east. The cultures of the Celtic and Iberian populations were gradually Romanized, Latinized, at different rates depending on what part of Hispania they lived in. It was referred to as Hispania back then, apparently, according to the Wikipedia. Christianity was introduced into Hispania in the 1st century AD, and it became popular in the cities in the 2nd century AD. Most of Spain's present languages and religion and the basis of its laws originate from this period. The weakening of the Western Roman Empire's jurisdiction in Hispania began in 409 when the Germanic Suebi and Vandals entered the peninsula at the invitation of a Roman usurper. the Suebi established a kingdom in what is today modern Galicia and northern Portugal, whereas the Vandals established themselves in southern Spain by 420. These successor regimes maintained many of the institutions and laws of the late Roman Empire. In the 8th century, nearly all of the Iberian Peninsula was conquered, 711 to 718, by largely Moorish Muslim armies from North Africa. Conversion to Islam proceeded at an increasing pace. The Romanized cultures of the Iberian Peninsula interacted with Muslim and Jewish cultures in complex ways, giving the region a distinctive culture. Outside the cities, where the vast majority lived, the land ownership system from Roman times remained largely intact, as Muslim leaders rarely dispossessed landowners, and the introduction of new crops and techniques led to an expansion of agriculture. In the 11th century, the Muslim holdings fractured into rival Taifa kingdoms, allowing the small Christian states the opportunity to greatly enlarge their territories. The Reconquest was the centuries-long period in which Christian rule was re-established over the Iberian Peninsula. For several centuries, the fluctuating frontier between the Muslim and Christian-controlled areas of Iberia was along the Ebro and Douro valleys. Following a great Muslim resurgence in the 12th century, the great Moorish strongholds in the south fell to Christian Spain in the 13th century. Cordoba in 1236 and Seville in 1248. After 800 years of Muslim presence in Spain, the last Nasrid Sultanate of Granada, a tributary state, would finally surrender in 1492 to the Catholic monarchs Queen Isabella I of Castile and King Ferdinand II of Aragon.
That same year, Spain's Jews were ordered to convert to Catholicism or face expulsion from Spanish territories during the Spanish Inquisition. The Treaty of Granada guaranteed religious tolerance towards Muslims for a few years before Islam was outlawed in 1502 in the Kingdom of Castile and 1527 in the Kingdom of Aragon. A few decades later, a significant portion of Spain's formerly Muslim population was expelled, settling primarily in North Africa. The year 1492 also marked the arrival of Christopher Columbus.
Hey.
Not the movie director. In the New World during a voyage funded by Isabella. The colonization of the Americas soon started with conquistadors like Hernan Cortes and Francisco Pizarro.
Yeah, the guys that I did my
high school stuff on. Those guys, yeah, we're back to them again. Juan Sebastian Elcano completed the first voyage around the world in human history, the Magellan Elcano circumnavigation. As Renaissance new monarchs, Isabella and Ferdinand, centralized royal power at the expense of local nobility and the word España, whose root is the ancient name Hispania, began to be commonly used to designate the whole of the two kingdoms. With wide-ranging political, legal, religious, and military reforms, Spain emerged as the world's first power. Spain was Europe's leading power throughout the 16th century and most of the 17th century, a position reinforced by trade and wealth from colonial possessions, and became the world's leading maritime power. Through exploration and conquest, or royal marriage alliances and inheritance, the Spanish Empire expanded to include vast areas of the Americas, islands in the Asia-Pacific area, areas of Italy, cities in Northern Africa, as well as some parts that are now France, Germany, Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands. This was the age of discovery, with explorations by sea and by land, the opening up of new trade routes across oceans, conquests, and the beginnings of European colonialism. Spanish explorers brought back precious metals, spices, luxuries, and previously unknown plants, and played a leading part in transforming European understanding of the globe. The expansion of the empire caused immense upheaval in the Americas as the collapse of societies and empires and new diseases from Europe devastated American indigenous populations. In the late 16th century and the first half of the 17th century, Spain was confronted by unrelenting challenges from all sides. Barbary pirates disrupted life in many coastal areas through their slave raids and the renewed threat of an Islamic invasion. This was at a time when Spain was often at war with France. The Protestant Reformation dragged the kingdom even more deeply into the mire of religiously charged wars. The result was a country forced into ever-expanding military efforts across Europe and in the Mediterranean.
Wind Machine Podcast.
By the middle decades of a war and plague-ridden 17th century Europe, the Spanish Habsburgs had entrenched the country in continent-wide religious political conflicts. These conflicts drained it of resources and undermined the economy generally. Spain managed to hold on to most of the scattered Habsburg Empire and helped the imperial forces of the Holy Roman Empire reverse a large part of the advances made by Protestant forces. But it was finally forced to recognize the separation of Portugal and the Netherlands and eventually suffered some serious military loss to France in the latter stages of the immensely destructive Europe-wide 30 Years' War.
Was the 30 Years' War 30 years? I think I've asked you this before.
No, well, there's a debate over that. It could have been 29 years, 31 years. I think they just averaged it out and it was 30 years.
Yeah, fair enough.
In the latter half of the 17th century, Spain went into a gradual decline, during which it surrendered several small territories to France and the Netherlands. However, it maintained and enlarged its vast overseas empire, which remained intact until the beginning of the 19th century. The decline culminated in a controversy over succession to the throne, which consumed the first years of the 18th century. The War of the Spanish Succession was a wide-ranging international conflict combined with a civil war, the first of many, and was to cost the kingdom its European possessions and its position as one of the leading powers on the continent. During this war, a new dynasty originated in France, the Bourbons, was installed. Long united only by the crown, a true Spanish state was established when the first Bourbon king, Jack Daniels, Philip V, united the crowns of Castile and Aragon into a single state, abolishing many of the old regional privileges and laws. The 18th century saw a gradual recovery and an increase in prosperity through much of the empire. The Bourbon monarchy drew on the French system of modernizing the administration and the economy. In 1793, Spain went to war against the revolutionary new French Republic as a member of the First Coalition. Peace was made with France in 1795. However, in 1807, a secret treaty between Napoleon and the then Spanish Prime Minister led to a declaration of war against Britain and Portugal. Napoleon's troops entered the country to invade Portugal, but instead occupied Spain's major fortresses. This ridiculed the Spanish king, who was forced to abdicate in favour of Napoleon's brother, Joseph Bonaparte. Joseph Bonaparte was seen as a puppet monarch and was regarded with scorn by the Spanish. Civil revolts marked the beginning of a devastating war of independence against the Napoleonic regime. Napoleon was forced to intervene personally, defeating several Spanish armies. I have it on good authority that he did that by himself. However, further military action by Spanish armies, guerrillas, and British Portuguese forces, combined with Napoleon's disastrous invasion of Russia, led to the ousting of the French imperial armies from Spain in 1814 and the return of the King Ferdinand VII. We've got a lot of Lord of the Rings, you know.
I know. References. Return of the King.
Yes.
Throw the ring, Frodo.
The Napoleonic War left Spain economically ruined, deeply divided, and politically unstable. In the 1830s and 1840s, anti-liberal forces known as Carlists fought against liberals in the Carlist Wars. Liberal forces won, but the conflict between progressive and conservative liberals ended in a weak early constitutional period. After the glorious revolution of 1868 and the short-lived First Spanish Republic, a more stable monarchic period began characterized by the practice of a rotation of government control between progressives and conservatives within the Spanish government. Imagine that, progressives and conservatives working together.
Pity dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
The 20th century brought little peace. Spain played a minor part in the scramble for Africa with the colonization of the Western Sahara, Spanish Morocco, and Equatorial Guinea. It remained neutral during World War I.
After a period of authoritarian rule under General Miguel Primo de Rivera, the king sought a solution to the political situation and established a constitution. Organized demonstrations demanding the establishment of a democratic republic led the king to leave the country, and a proclamation of the same on April the 14th of that same year. During the Second Republic, there was a great political and social upheaval marked by a sharp radicalization of the left and right. Violent acts during this period, including the burning of churches, the revolution of 1934 and the numerous attacks against rival political leaders. On the other hand, it was also during the Second Republic when important reforms were initiated to modernize the country. In 1936, a revolt against the government of the Republic occurred, and the military garrisons of the Spanish North Africa attempted a coup d'etat, but only managed to take over part of the country. Well, at least they tried. Spain was divided into two zones, one under the authority of the Republican government and the other controlled by the insurgents. It sounds a little bit like Cyprus.
It does a bit.
Yeah, we'll just draw a line in the middle of the country. It's fine, don't worry about it. The situation led to a civil war in which the general Francisco Franco was sworn in as the supreme leader of the insurgents. For 3 years, the forces led by General Franco and supported by Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, what a bunch, fought the Republican side, which was supported by the Soviet Union, Mexico, and the International Brigades. But it was not supported by the Western powers due to the British-led policy of non-intervention.
Yeah, that worked.
Yeah, that really worked. The Civil War was viciously fought, and there were many atrocities committed by all sides. The war claimed the lives of over 500,000 people. Yikes. And caused the flight of up to 500,000 citizens from the country. In 1939, General Franco emerged victorious and became a dictator. The state, as established under Franco, was nominally neutral in the Second World War, although sympathetic to the Axis.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
After World War II, Spain was politically and economically isolated and was kept out of the United Nations. No, you've been bad. This changed in 1955 during the Cold War period, when it became strategically important for the US to establish a military presence on the Iberian Peninsula as a counter to any possible move by the Soviet Union into the Mediterranean basin. So they basically just came in and said, I like your land, thanks.
Like they do with every country.
Yes. In the 1960s, Spain registered an unprecedented rate of economic growth, which was propelled by industrialization, mass internal immigration from rural areas to Madrid, Barcelona, and Basque Country, and the creation of a mass tourism industry. Franco's rule was also characterised by authoritarianism, promotion of unitary national identity, the favouring of a very conservative form of Roman Catholicism known as national Catholicism, and discriminatory language policies.
And as many of you hardcore Eurovision fans know, Franco's rule also influenced Eurovision itself.
Oh, yes!
It has been argued that the 1968 contest, La La, La La, La La, La La La, La 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 La, La La La.
They're all the words, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was rigged somehow, I don't know, perhaps by Spain, so they could host the contest in 1969.
Well, I think you got that from Cliff Richard, because he was not impressed coming second that year. But we'll talk more about that
exactly
in Spain and Eurovision.
With Franco's death in November 1975, Juan Carlos succeeded to the position of King of Spain and Head of State in accordance with the Franquist law. With the approval of the new Spanish constitution of 1978 and the restoration of democracy, the state devolved much authority to the regions and created an internal organization based on autonomous communities. During the 1980s, the democratic restoration was made possible by a growing open society. New cultural movements based on freedom appeared and a culture of human rights arose. On the 30th of May 1982, Spain joined NATO. That year, the Spanish Socialist Workers' Party came to power, the first left-wing government in 43 years.
Wow!
In 1986, Spain joined the European Economic Community, which later became the European Union. On the 1st of January 2002, Spain fully adopted the euro, and Spain experienced strong economic growth, well above the EU average during the early 2000s. A Catalan independence referendum was held just recently, Danny, on the 1st of October 2017. And then on the 27th of October, the Catalan parliament voted to unilaterally declare independence from Spain to form a Catalan republic. On the day the Spanish Senate was discussing approving direct rule over Catalonia, as called for by the Spanish Prime Minister, Mariano Rajoy. Later that day, the Senate granted the power to impose direct rule, and the Prime Minister dissolved the Catalan Parliament and called a new election. No country recognised Catalonia as a separate state.
That's going to keep going.
Yep. On the 1st of June 2018, that's like not long ago, the Congress of Deputies passed the motion of no confidence against the Prime Minister and replaced him with the opposition leader, Pedro Sanchez, thus bringing socialists back to power after 7 years.
Wind Machine Podcast.
Now, I know we've touched on a little bit about Roman Catholicism. Wait for this bit. This is intense. Roman Catholicism has long been the main religion of Spain, and although it no longer has official status by law, in all public schools in Spain, students have to choose either a religion or an ethics class. Catholicism is the religion most commonly taught, although the teaching of Islam, Judaism, and evangelical Christianity is also recognised by law. According to a 2016 study by the Spanish Centre of Sociological Research, about 70% of Spaniards self-identify as Catholics, 2% are the faith, and about 25% identify with no religion. Most Spaniards do not participate regularly in religious services. The same study shows that of the Spaniards who identify themselves as religious, 59% hardly ever go to church, 16% go to church sometimes of the year, and 9% go once a month, and 15% every Sunday or multiple times per week. Recent polls and surveys revealed that atheists and agnostics comprise anything from between 20 to 27% of the Spanish population. Protestant churches have about 1,200,000 members. Mark is so glad he didn't have to say Protestantism. there are about 105,000 Jehovah's Witnesses. They're always everywhere. The Church of Jesus Christ and the Latter-day Saints has approximately 46,000 adherents in 133 congregations in all the regions of the country and has a temple in Madrid. A study made by the Union of Islamic Communities of Spain demonstrated that there were about 1,700,000 inhabitants of Muslim background living in Spain as of 2012, accounting for between 3 and 4% of the total population of Spain. The vast majority was composed of immigrants and descendants originating from Morocco, of course, it's right next door, and other African countries. More than 30% of them had Spanish nationality. The recent waves of immigration have also led to the increasing number of Hindus, Buddhists, Sikhs, and more Muslims. Judaism was practically non-existent in Spain from the 1492 expulsion until the 19th century, where Jews were again permitted to enter the country. Currently, there are about 62,000 Jews in Spain. Most are arrivals in the past century, while some are descendants of earlier Spanish Jews. Approximately 80,000 Jews have thought to have lived in Spain prior to the expulsion. That was an amazing history.
Oh, it was totally full on.
And that's why we called it Captain España
Civil War. How many civil wars can you have in the country's history?
Ridiculous.
Wow.
After all that, I think we need something quite powerful but moody.
From 2015, here's Amancia by Edran.
Sangre, tanto amor.
Estran García Almagro, born 1985, is a Spanish singer, actress and TV presenter. She rose to fame in late 2005 when she took part in the Spanish casting show Star Academy and finished in sixth place. She started attending auditions as a child. At the age of 9, she became a member of the children's music group Tratos. She also had, as a child, minor roles in Spanish TV series Hospital Central. She has released 6 albums. Amancia is Dawn in English. The song came 21st place in the final on a measly 15 points.
Not right, huh?
No.
It's not right. This official clip, if we haven't already made enough references to Lord of the Rings, we're going to do it now. There's a hot bloke and a tiger. He runs a lot.
On the spot.
On the spot. He sort of runs a bit like, what's-his-face from Belarus. It was hurry up and get to the thing. She's in a red dress. She finds him. Suddenly, she is the tiger. Whoa. Then, of course, there's a ring. Throw it a ring, Frodo. He goes into the temple. He finds an eagle. And then she almost congratulates him. Well done, you've found the eagle. I have no idea what any of that meant.
It looked like one of those weird computer-generated background graphics, like, you know, like the Spartans movie?
Oh, probably.
300, that's it.
Oh, the 300.
300.
Yeah.
It felt like that. It was, like, really bizarre.
It's probably really deep. I just...
yeah.
I don't know. At the Eurovision stage, we continue with a bit of red. She's got the red cloak, and there's a guy on the floor. I love it when there's a guy on the floor. Anyway, he stands up and halfway through the song, he makes her red train into a long line. Mm. And then, of course, there's the big costume reveal where he rips the red off and she's suddenly in this gold outfit. She reaches a lot while she sings.
Yes, she does.
She's a real reacher. Rawr! Yeah,
mercy.
Yeah, maybe it's because she's the tiger. Rawr.
Oh, maybe.
Rawr. And then there's a bit of dancing at the end.
Yes.
There's not a lot really going on, but... she was a real fan favourite.
Yeah, that didn't work out.
No, I think sometimes Spain gets a bit of a bum deal.
Hmm.
Now, speaking of, mountains and temples and tigers and stuff, we're now going to talk about geography, climate and politics.
Okay.
Spain is the world's 52nd largest country and Europe's 4th largest country. It is some 47,000 square kilometres smaller than France and 81,000 kilometres square larger than the US state of California. Now, California is pretty big.
Mm.
So Spain's way bigger than California. Mount Teide is the highest mountain peak in Spain and is the 3rd largest volcano in the world from its base. Spain is a transcontinental country extending up to 1,214 kilometres. The Portugal-Spain border is the longest uninterrupted border within the European Union. And now I'm calling it Sportugal. That's my new name for it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
3 main climatic zones can be separated according to geographical situation and orographic conditions. The Mediterranean climate, characterised by warm, hot and dry summers, is dominant in the peninsula. The Sahar zone is associated to areas with hot summers. It is predominant in the Mediterranean and southern Atlantic coast and inland through Andalusia, Extremadura and much, if not most, of the centre of the country. The Sahar zone covers climatic zones with both relatively warm and cold winters, which are considered extremely different to each other at a local level, reason for which Köppen classification is often eschewed within Spain. Local climatic maps generally divide the Mediterranean zone, which covers most of the country, between warm winter and cold winter zones rather than according to summer temperatures. The subzone has warm rather than hot summers and extends to additional cool winter areas not typically associated with a Mediterranean climate, such as much of central and northern central Spain, and into much rainier areas, notably Galicia. Areas with relatively high rainfall, such as Galicia, are not considered Mediterranean under local classifications, but classed as oceanic.
It's a bit of a mix, isn't it?
It is. The semi-arid climate is predominant in the southeastern quarter of the country, but is also widespread in other areas of Spain. It covers most of the region of Murcia, southern Valencia, and eastern Andalusia, where hot, true desert climates also exist. Further to the north, it is predominant in the upper and mid reaches of the Ebro Valley, which crosses southern Navarre, central Aragon, and western Catalonia. It also is found in Madrid, Extremadura, Castilla-La Mancha, and some locations of western Andalusia. The dry season extends beyond the summer, and average temperature depends on altitude and latitude. The oceanic climate, located in the northern quarter of the country, especially in the Atlantic region, winter and summer temperatures are influenced by the ocean and have no seasonal drought.
Spain, now, is a constitutional monarchy with a hereditary monarch and a bicameral parliament. The General Courts, the executive branch, consists of a council of ministers of Spain presided over by the Prime Minister, nominated and appointed by the monarch and confirmed by Congress of Deputies following legislative elections. By political custom, established by King Juan Carlos since the ratification of the 1978 Constitution, the king's nominees have all been from parties who maintain the plurality of seats in the Congress. The legislative branch is made up of the Congress of Deputies with 350 members, elected by popular vote on block lists of proportional representation to serve four-year terms, and a Senate with 259 seats, of which 208 directly elected by popular vote using a limited voting method, and the other 51 appointed by regional legislators, also to serve four-year terms. Spain is organisationally structured as a so-called state of autonomies. It is one of the most decentralised countries in Europe, along with Switzerland, Germany and Belgium. For example, all autonomous communities have their own elected parliaments, governments, public administrations, budgets and resources. Health and education system, among others, are managed by the Spanish communities, and in addition, the Basque County and Navarre also manage their own public finances based on foreign provisions.
The Spanish armed forces are in charge of guaranteeing the sovereignty and independence of Spain, defender of its territorial integrity and the constitutional order, according to the functions entrusted in the Constitution of 1978. These are formations by the Army, the Air Force, the Spanish Armada, the Royal Guard, and the Military Emergency Unit, as well as the so-called Common Core. Spain is one of the most important nations of the European Union and Eurocorps. It also has the oldest Marine Corps in the world and the oldest permanent military units in the world. Spain participated along with France, the United Kingdom, Italy, Denmark, the United States and Canada in the offensive against Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, contributing a tanker, four F-18 fighter jets, a frigate, a submarine and a surveillance aircraft, along with logistical support from the naval base of Rota and the air base of Moran.
So after all that, we need something a little bit silly.
Very silly. This
very, very silly.
And we're sorry, but this is a little bit of a troll song.
It is a little bit of a troll song. From 2006, here's Bloody Mary by Lass Ketchup.
Un Bloody Mary, por favor.
Ketchup is a Spanish girl group founded by flamenco record producer Manuel Ruiz. The group is made up of sisters Lucia, Lola, Pilar, and Rocio Muñez. Las Ketchup was best known for this 2002 hit single. The Ketchup song was a single that sold over 7 million copies worldwide. Why?
Why?
The group's debut album, Hilas del Tomate, sold over 12 million copies. Wow, worldwide. But the second album did not achieve the same success. The group has not released any singles since 2006. Was this the death knell? We'll send them to Eurovision. Yeah. Goodness. But still performs together, that's nice, around Spain and other countries. In 2016, the group performed their hit song, The Ketchup Song, at the interval during the first semi-final of Melody Festivalen.
Ooh,
that would have been a big gig for them.
Yeah.
The song came 21st in the final. It's quite respectable. On 18 points. There's a few troll songs that Spain has produced over the last few years. We're not even going to talk about Manel.
I think that was unintentionally a troll song. Just quietly.
But yes, we had, you know, El Chiqui Chiqui.
Oh, yes.
Which was quite... But we decided to keep this one basically because of... the fact that they did so well, but then it was kind of weird. Like, I think they were really hoping that, you know, 4 years after the Ketchup song, this could maybe reignite their careers, and unfortunately it didn't.
It killed it.
I have to say the Spanish delegation threw a heck of a lot of money at this. So much money.
So much. Oh, my God. I've never seen such amazing choreography. You know, special effects, and of course I'm joking.
If you haven't seen the official clip of Bloody Mary, you should really look at it because it's basically the four sisters performing in front of drawings. That's it.
Yep, and they keep walking across the screen.
It's
That's it.
Quite bizarre. But you've got to admit, when we get to Eurovision, I've never seen desk chairs... feature so prominently in an act. We have two dancers who kind of remind me of those dancers that poor Julia had at this year's Eurovision, yeah. Right? They're kind of there to distract you.
Yep.
Look, the girls sing fine.
Yeah.
They sing fine.
They're fine.
And they're all dressed in red, but I don't know what the hell is with the office chairs. The main reason why we put this song in is we still like it, and it's got this fantastic Montenegrin of duty free, duty free, duty free, which we all like when we get to an airport.
Yes.
Yes. Look, you know, I think this song is important for Spain and Eurovision. It was a comeback that didn't happen.
It's what we commonly call a massive flop.
Yeah. Mind you, the UK tried it with Engelbert Humperdinck, didn't they? Oh, and Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah.
No, sometimes it just doesn't work.
No.
If you're not still on the app, it just no. But yeah, duty free, duty free, duty free.
Despite all these, you know, interesting songs of the 21st century, Spain hasn't had a bad run in its entire history.
No. Early on, they did really well. Yeah. So, are you going to talk about Spain and Eurovision?
Oh, of course I am, Danny.
All right.
Spain has participated in the Eurovision Song Contest 58 times since making its debut in 1961, where they finished ninth. Since 1999, Spain is one of the big five, along with France, Germany, Italy and the UK, who are automatically allowed to participate in the final because they are the five biggest financial contributors to the EBU. Spain has competed in the contest continuously since the country's debut in 1961. Well done.
Mm.
The only country with a longer run of uninterrupted Eurovision appearances is the United Kingdom, ever present since 1959.
God, that's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah. Spain has won the contest twice, first in 1968, as we alluded to earlier with the song La La La, sung by Maceo, and again in 1969 when Salome's Viva Cantando was involved in a four-way tie with France, the Netherlands and the UK. Yes, Franco had no connection whatsoever to the outcome of either of those contests. The 1969 contest in Madrid is the only time Spain has hosted the event since lots were drawn after 1969's four-way tie and the 1970 contest was hosted by the Netherlands. Spain has also finished second in the contest four times, in 1971, 73, 79 and in 1995, and third in 1984. The country finished last with null points three times, in 1962, 1965 and 1983, and also finished last in 1999 and 2017. Do it for your number! Spain has had less success in recent years, failing to reach the top 10 in 12 of the last 14 contests. That's 2005 to 2018. The exceptions being 10th place finishes in 2012 and 2014. Spain has regularly changed the selection process used in order to find the country's entry for the contest, either a national final or internal selection. From 2000, Spain has used various selection formats with different results. In 2000 and 2001, TVE organised a national final called Eurosong, where the Spanish representative was selected for the contest. From 2002 to 2004, the reality television talent competition Star Academy was used to select the entry, a format that renewed the Spanish audience interest in the contest and brought three top 10 results in a row until TVE decided not to host any further editions of the series. In 2005, the national final Eurovision 2005 Choose Our Song was organised, where the audience chose their favourite song among a pre-selection made by TVE of unknown artists submitted to them by record labels. The result in the Eurovision final was not good, and for 2006, the selection was made internally for the first time since 1999, with a similar result. In 2007, Spain's entry was decided through the Mission Eurovision 2007 show with a disappointing result once again. From 2008 to 2010, the internet was the key element of the competitions used by TVE to select the Spanish entry. In 2008, the social networking website MySpace, for anyone out there who still remembers it, was involved in the national final. Let's Save Eurovision didn't help themselves.
No.
A website was created to make it possible for anyone to upload a song and proceed to a televised final if chosen by online voters or an expert jury. The result improved a little, but not by much. Nevertheless, the interest of the Spanish audience was revived again. For 2009, MySpace was still involved, unfortunately, in the selection process. Eurovision 2009, The Return, although some changes were introduced in the format. The result was the worst in the 2000s decade, 24th place. Well, if you continue to use MySpace, of course you're going to have a really crap result.
What's his name again?
Tom.
Tom!
Yeah, bloody Tom.
Bloody Tom. Like, do you remember how you feel of relief when you had enough people to put in your top six, was it? You could get rid of Tom.
Yeah.
Mind you, I didn't mind when you joined MySpace that you automatically had a friend. Thanks for that, Tom.
Tom. In 2010, a similar format, Eurovision Destination Oslo selected the Spanish entry with the best result since 2004, 15th.
So in 2011, they basically got rid of MySpace like everyone else did. Internet voting was scrapped for the new selection method, Destination Eurovision, after a further disappointing result, 23rd, in 2012, TVE decided to approach an established act, Pastora Soler, and organised a national final to select her song. A top 10 result was achieved. Yay! For the first time since 2004. Didn't make the podcast. The same procedure was repeated in 2013, which turned out to be the most disappointing result, which they came second last, of the country's Eurovision history. Some critics, however, blamed a less than stellar performance of an otherwise solid song. In 2014, TVE decided to return to a multi-artist national finals procedure called Look Who's Going to Eurovision. Five artists were invited to participate by the network. A top 10 result was achieved for the second time in 3 years. In 2015, the first time since 2006, both the artist and the song were selected internally. In December 2015, TVE announced that it would organise a national final in order to select the Spanish entry for 2016. Six acts competed in a national final and Barré won the selection process. The same format was used in 2017 when Manel Navarro won the selection process and turned out to be Spain's first last place result since 1999.
Wasn't there a bit of controversy that Manel won? I think, wasn't there some favouritism?
Oh, there was something,
there
was something about one of the jury members liking a bit of Manel.
Right.
Yeah, yes. Apparently. I haven't really dug too much into that and
yeah,
I choose not to.
Yeah, that worked really well.
And of course, now, this year was Star Academy, and I think next year is Star Academy as well. Here's a bit of controversy as well. Spain was drawn to perform second in the running order in 2010, and singer Daniel Díez's performance of Aglo Quintpento was disturbed by notorious pitch invader Jimmy Jump. However, Daniel performed the song in full, because he's a trooper, despite the invader's intrusion and subsequent removal from the stage by security personnel. Remember when we thought Jimmy Jump was back this year? Different guy. He received warm applause for continuing from the spectators in the arena. After the exhibition of Serbia, co-presenter Nadia Hazanoy announced that, according to the rules, Daniel would be given a second chance to perform, which was very nice. Nonetheless, the juries ranked the dress rehearsal performance 20th out of 25 places on 43 points, whereas the television vote ranked Spain 12th with 106 points. The combination of jury and televote gave Spain a 15th place. The thing is, when you watch that stage invasion, stupid Jimmy Jump, I thought he was part of the act.
So did I.
Let's
be
serious. Like, the first time I saw it, I thought, oh, that guy's not dressed properly. That's all I thought. He's not in, he doesn't look like he fits in, but that's okay. And then, of course, they dragged him off, and I was like, oh. But yeah, Daniel was a bit of a trooper, really. Since 2000, Spain has performed 12 times in Spanish, 5 times in a mix of Spanish and English, and once fully in English. Spain usually gives their top points to Portugal.
Surprise, surprise.
Germany and Italy. And they receive their most points from Portugal.
Surprise, surprise.
France and Switzerland. That's interesting, isn't it? You know what?
What?
The rain in Spain does stay mainly in the plain. Or in Ruth's case, she gets to dance in the rain. Like the other movie.
Ooh, yes. From 2014, he's Dancing in the Rain again by Ruth Lorenzo.
Luz, yo quiero ver luz, poder pintar de color un nuevo amanecer, vivir, amar, sentir y saber que hoy puede que no salga el sol. Aunque llueva, tú y yo sabremos bailar, nadie nos puede parar. We're dancing in the rain, dancing in the rain. Life gets you every time,
Ruth Lorenzo Pasquale, born 1982. Jeez, there's a lot of people born in 1982.
I know, there's a whole spate of 1982ers. I don't know, weird.
Is a Spanish singer and composer, best known for coming fifth in the British TV talent show The X Factor in 2008. Artists such as Aurin and Danny Minogue have included compositions of hers in their albums.
I love that random Danny Minogue reference. That's fantastic. Yes.
At a very young age, she became a fan of the musical Annie, and although she had no idea what the words meant, she would sing along to the songs in English. When she was 6 years old, she began to sing opera. At the age of 12, Ruth's family moved to Utah in the United States, and this was the first time she had the opportunity to be involved in music at school. After much encouragement from her teachers, Ruth was entered into competitions and played lead roles in musical productions such as The Phantom of the Opera and My Fair Lady.
Funny that.
Funny. When she turned 16, the family returned to Spain, and although having had singing lessons by this time, she had to cancel these lessons due to family financial difficulty, and she gave up on her dream of becoming a recording artist. When she was 19, she joined a rock band, which was a challenge for her as she had only sung opera music. She also made a big decision to quit her job in her family's business in order to pursue her dreams once again. But after 3 years of touring around Spain, the group decided to split up. Ruth, though, has since released two albums, and Dancing in the Rain came 10th in the final on 74 points.
You know, and we always kind of laugh when sometimes wet Eurovision doesn't work. It works for this one.
It does.
The official clip, I was quite sort of taken by it, actually. It was very emotional. So Ruth is in a loft. She dances with a guy in a puddle. There's more dancing. And then there's underwater swimming. And everything's very wet. It's very wet.
It's very wet.
It's very wet. She continues the wet look for the Eurovision stage. But see, the thing is, she doesn't look stupid.
No.
You know how sometimes, you know, women of Eurovision decide to do the wet look? Your mate Demi from Greece the other year, when that was weird. And she also had men dancing in a puddle.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a theme. Weird.
Yes.
But it's very clever what they did in 2014, is that, you know, we had the LEDs on the bottom and we had the LEDs behind, and there was just the idea of rain about her. That live performance was sublime.
Yeah, it was flawless to me.
Just amazing.
Absolute.
A worthy
pitch perfect.
10.
Oh, yeah.
A worthy 10. So yeah. Well done, Ruth. See, we've done a bit of different stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, got to keep it fresh and exciting.
Especially when it comes to Spain.
Well, that's right. I know. Look, they're not my favourite country in Eurovision. It's usually the one that I go, oh, what's Spain done this year?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they're hitting their stride again, because I think this year, of course, was a lovely ballad, and we hadn't had a boy-girl ballad for a while, so you never know. We'll see what they bring for 2019.
Yeah, let's hope they improve a lot.
I know.
They really need it.
They need to fight for it, you know? This is the thing. Unfortunately, with the big five, like the UK, they just kind of coast. Oh, it's all right, we're already in the finals, don't worry about it. But it's like, no, fight for it. Come on, make it interesting. Since we have no Yoda Beanie of Doom, our next episode will be our last country, which will be Lithuania.
Wow.
And the Yoda Beanie of Doom gets to have a little rest until season two.
Coming 2019.
So what do you know about Lithuania?
The capital of Lithuania, Fleur, is Vilnius. Hi, Fleur.
Hi, Fleur. Good flag.
Good flag.
Good flag. Good Eurovision songs. This is going to be hard. This is going to be our last hurrah, and it's going to be hard. We've got Donny times two.
Monica.
I know. We've got lovely Monica. We've got the guy with the shoes. The other is love and the other is pain. Mm.
We are the winners of Eurovision.
We are. Also, I have to say it, dear listeners, Reign of Revolution is not going to get there. Oh,
sorry. Yeah,
yeah, no. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Although, when we're old.
Oh, I know you love her. You're very singy tonight, which is very nice.
That two glasses of wine will do that to you.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm missing out. Could I have the legal announcement, please?
Sure. We at Wind Machine Podcasts have taken every legal step allowed to us to present this podcast with a current APRA license, and we claim fair use for the music played. We are not affiliated with the EBU, its partners, or SBS. We are just fans.
It's been a massive episode, and the fact that you've made it through, congratulations to you. It was fun to record, though.
Yeah.
It's always fun when we get alongy. I've been Danny Trigoning, and you can find me on Twitter, DanieTreg.
And you can find me, Mark Perkins, on Twitter at MarkPerkinsVO.
You can find the podcast Twitter account at WinMachinePod.
Like us on Facebook.
And find us on any of the podcasty thingies that are floating around, like Mixcloud, TuneIn, Podbean, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, etc., etc. And if we're not on your favourite one, let us know, because we'll get on it.
But don't forget to take a look at our website, WinMachinePodcast.com.
Hopefully this won't be as long. We had a few kind of things, life things come up, and that's
why of life things.
This was delayed a little bit. But hopefully we will be out with Lithuania. And don't forget, we have the two special episodes after Lithuania and our kind of excellent
season one finale, episode 50.
Season one finale, which I'm still working on, and that's a very long process, but no spoilers. Until then, we will be back with episode 47, Lithuania. Be good, listeners, and we'll catch you soon.
Goodbye.
Bye.